Okay, so we only have a few psukim in Vayelech, but also there's always, you'll find that there's always more than it seems. And we'll try just to say a few words about those few psukim, and then we'll try to talk a little bit about one of the themes of Tzom Gedalia, which is not always appreciated. Mincha is 1:30.
Yeah, that's what does.
Okay, so we'll do what we can in the time that we have. So the Aliyah begins. Here we have Moshe. This is as far as the transition between this Aliyah and what comes before it and what comes after it. So right before at the end of Sheni, so you have Moshe saying to the Jews, Chizku v'imtzu. Al tiru v'al tartzim ipneihem, ki Hashem elokechu halech imach, li'arbacha v'lo yazveka. So you have Moshe telling to the Jews about to enter the land not to be afraid. So here in Shlishi, so you have that phrase in the singular, v'yikra Moshe Yeshua v'yomer elav le'ena chol Yisrael, chazak v'amatz, ki ata savo ha'sa'am hazeh, el ha'aretz asher nishba Hashem le'avosam, l'seis lahem v'ata tanchile osam. So here you have the same words here, but in singular, chazak v'amatz, and as Rav Hirsch notes, that it's the same words, but it's a different point. That the idea of being strong and being steadfast, so that was a message told to the entire Jewish people about entering into the land. They shouldn't be afraid. But when he says these words to Yoshua, he's talking about something beyond that. He's talking about his leadership of the Jewish people, that he should remain strong and steadfast. He should be strong in his commitment to the Torah and to look to there for his instruction and strong to his values. And also, v'amatz, you shouldn't be afraid when you reach obstacles. There are going to be things in your way, but you shouldn't let that stop you. You shouldn't let that interfere. And the Meshech Chachma comments, and Ravaji Yosef has a comment as well, the Sefer Paris Yosef HaChadosh quotes Ravaji Yosef as having made a similar comment in an article, that the emphasis also of telling Yeshua to be chazak has to do with the notion that we're aware of, that Yeshua, like his Rabbi Moshe, was very much modest, was an onav. But as much as that's true, you have to be stark in front of the people, that as the leader of the people in a royal role, so you can't be retreating, you can't be of a diminishing kind of personality, you have to stand up straight and you have to lead them, and you can't be in retreat. And that's a part of the message that Moshe is conveying to them. So Moshe is conveying specifically to Yehoshua. So then there is a Rashi here, which is a little difficult to understand what Rashi is getting at, that here Rashi highlights the idea of ki ata tavo es ha'am hazeh. So how would you translate tavo? And as Rashi notes, that later on in Pasuk Chav Gimel, so there is what seems to be a different kind of language. It says tavi. There it's Kadosh Baruch Hu speaking. And the language is tavi. So if you look at Rashi here, ki'ata tavo es ha'am hazeh kisar gemo, are'at teyol imama hadein, you are to go with the people. You're going to go in. S here would mean then with the people. Moshe amar le'Yoshua zekeinim shevador yu imcha, that the Talmidei Chacham of the generation are also going to be with you. Hakol lefi daiton v'atzason. So you're not going to be alone. So you are going to go. You're going to go into land with these people. Aval Kadosh Baruch Hu amar le'Yoshua ki ata tavi es bnei Yisrael el ha'aretz asher nishbat lahem. So tavi, Hirashi writes, al korcha, makol tali b'cha, it's all up to you. Tol makel v'hachal kadkadon, you have to take your staff and hit them over the head. Dabar echa, dabar echad lador, v'lo shnei dabarim lador. That there's only one leader, you're the leader, you're the sole leader, and you're going to take them in. So the difference in the language here, Rashi seems to be highlighting, and what exactly the answer is, requires a little bit more explanation. So there are those who suggest, Rabbi Simon Shlita has an essay about this in his Sefer Imrei Baruch, that there's different focuses here, that the idea of Yehoshua as a leader of the Jewish people replacing Moshe, So as the Brisker Rav noted, Moshe had a dual role. He was the political leader of the Jewish people, and he was also the head of the Sanhedrin. And as the political leader, he's a king. He's a melech with all the dinim of the king, and he's in a singular role. And as the political leader, so then he is functioning that way, like a melech, but as the head of the Sanhedrin, so then he's functioning together with a group of others. He is the first among equals. So this shift in language, that here you're together with all the Zakenim, that's focusing on his role of the as the head of the Sanhedrin. And the idea that's expressed later, that you're there by yourself, that's focusing on his role as the king. Okay, so that's one way of looking at it. The Taz, in his commentary, the Divrei David, so he has it a little bit differently. It's all the same role, but it's different stages. That when you're the king, so you consult with your advisors, so you have all the people coming to tell you what they think. But ultimately, the decision that you make, that has to be your own. You have to be able to lead with your own perspective and your own decisiveness. And in that context, you're acting as your own. You're acting as an individual. And that's what this second language in Rashi focuses on. Dabar echa l'dar v'lo shnei dabarim. But ultimately, the king, the buck stops here, they say. It's up to him to call the shots. And all the advice is there as part of the preparatory phase, but that's not what actually is going to make the decision. The Meshech Chachma has a few interpretations. If you want to take a look in the Sefer Meshech Chachma, he has a few comments about this. He mentioned something a little bit less positive sounding, that he thought that maybe Moshe had an overly ambitious view of Yehoshua. That the Gemara says, in Yerushalmi, that Moshe was compared to the sun, and Yehoshua was compared to the moon. Sometimes I ask people as a kind of a trivia question, that what Sfarim, named two Sfarim named after the moon, one Rishon and one Achron. So the answer to the question is that the Rishon that's named after the moon is the Mar HaKatan. That's the Torah calls the moon the Mar HaKatan, so Baal HaMor, part of it. And the Achron is the Pnei Yehoshua, because the Pnei Yehoshua is a reference to that phrase that the Gemara says, Pnei Moshe Kechama, Pnei Yehoshua Kelevana, that the face of Moshe was like the sun, and the face of Yehoshua was like the moon. So what's the difference between the sun and the moon? That we get light from both of them, but the sun generates its own light and reflects onto the moon, and the moon reflects back. So we get light from the moon only because it's reflected from the sun. So Yehoshua didn't have the same power to generate his own light as Moshe did. But the Meshech Chachma suggests that maybe Moshe thought that he could do it also. He could be like him, and he could transmit his light to others. So therefore, he could generate his light, and the Zakenim would also get light from him, and they could also shine to others. But Kadosh Baruch Hu was reflecting more the reality here, that there is a fundamental difference between Moshe and Yehoshua. So therefore, Yehoshua is spoken to in the singular. Okay, you're bringing your own light, but it's not necessarily going to be able to de-transmit it to others. That's a little bit less of an uplifting kind of interpretation. But the other interpretations see that there is this dual focus, that there is the role of consulting with others and being part of a group, and then there's also the singular leadership, and that's later on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was talking about in that context, Yehoshua. So the next pasuk continues, Vashem hu aholich lefanecha, hu yeimach, lo yarpecha, velo yazveka, lo sira, velo sechas. Okay, so God's going to be with you. Don't worry, you're carrying his message. Vayichtav Moshe es haTorah hazos, vayitna lakohanim b'nei Levi, hanosim es arun bris Hashem, el kol ziknei Yisrael. So Moshe wrote down the Torah, like he said he's going to do, and he put it in the hands of the Kohanim, the sons of Levi, who carry the arun bris Hashem, el kol ziknei Yisrael. So first of all, it seems a little bit of a shift here. He's giving Yehoshua his charge, what he's going to do. And then all of a sudden it says he wrote down the Torah and he put it in the hands of the Kohanim. So this is to emphasize that that is the source of Yehoshua's reign. The whole idea that he is able to lead, even as the political leader, comes from the essence of the Torah and his connection to the Torah. So as a part of that, it seems like it's a non sequitur. It seems like it's all of a sudden a scene shift. But really, this continues this message that Moshe is giving his instruction to Yehoshua and telling him that this is where his influence comes from and this is where his leadership comes from. The Gemara Gittin understands from here also the idea of the Kohen being preceded to the Levi, which may emphasize the idea that the Levi is there as a emphasis of the prioritization of the Kohen. It raises the question of, if you don't have a Kohen, should you give the first Aliyah to a Levi or not? That was Tudeus and Rashi and Gittin. And Rav Shechter relates that Rav Soloveitchik, when there was no Kohen present, he would decline to take the first Aliyah in order to teach the Shita that maybe you don't give the Aliyah to a Levi if there's no Kohen, because the role of the Levi is there to support the Kedusha of the Kohen. Mentioned before, trivia questions about Svarim. So another question I'd like to ask is, what are two Svarim that may not exist? So one answer is the Oneg Yantif, because it's not clear that there is a concept of Oneg when it comes to Yantif. And also Rav Yitzchak Kabardichev, much as we appreciate his writings and his teachings, but to say for Kedushas Levi is based on a premise that there's Kedusha to a Levi, that's a question of itself. Is the, you know, Kohen has Kedusha. Maybe the Levi's Kedusha is an extension of the support of the Kohen. But in any event, so here, so the Kohenim are given this job to hold the Torah. And Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch notes that even though normally the Levium would carry the Aron, but sometimes to emphasize something important, so as part of a display, the Kohanim would hold the Aron. And that was the message here. This was a moment of transition where it was important to make a point. And that this is given to them and to all called Ziknei Yisrael. Now, as far as transition from Aliyah, so the next Aliyah, you're going to read about Hakel and about gathering the entire Jewish people all the way down to the children. So if you look in the Meshech Chachma over here on this Pasuk, the last Pasuk of Shlishi, so he discusses, and it happens to synergize a little bit with the second paragraph of Abashra, so we can anticipate, we'll ultimately reconnect to this point, God willing. But the second paragraph of Abashra, there's a lot about Talmud Torah for the Tzibor and for the children, and how exactly the system was set up. So here the Meshech Chachma has a comment going through the history of the Jewish people, and from Moshe to Ezra and later, and how there were different attitudes. Should we be very exclusive and restrictive with Talmud Torah and only give it to the people who we really know are qualified? Or should we make sure that the Torah is spread far and wide, and that there should be a great exposure to the Torah on the behalf of the people? And we clearly have conflicting priorities, because on the one hand, we want to make sure that the Torah stays pure and pristine, and that it shouldn't be misinterpreted or misunderstood. And that's a crucial value, so we want to make sure the people who are receiving it are qualified. On the other hand, if we emphasize that too much, so then we risk the rabbim not getting the Torah and the whole Masorah of the Torah getting lost, and also the whole value of the Torah not making it to people who are not in that madriga, which is itself a very serious concern. So how exactly we balance those two extremes, so that's a second paragraph of a Basra topic, and I look forward to getting there, God willing. And it's a major Kal Yisrael challenge and important aspect of how we decide our educational priorities. And the Meshech Chachma, I believe his point in having the whole discussion of this pasuk is because of the transition from this Aliyah to the next, that here we're reading about what seems to be a focus to the Ziknei Yisrael as the receivers of the Torah, but then we're going to read about Hakel, about the Torah being read in a very broad context, even including those who we would think should be too young to understand anything, and yet there, but I've concluded also, and it represents the spectrum of these different priorities and the ongoing effort to try to balance that. Okay, so with that, let's just say a few quick words about Tzom Gedalia, and there's really a lot to say, and we only have a few minutes, but just to make one important point, which is a big Aseret Yemei Teshuva point as well. So, first of all, the idea of fasting for Gedalia. Remember, my father used to always say over the joke that somebody was resistant to fasting and some Gedalia because he said, first of all, why should I fast just because Gedalia was killed? So, first of all, by now he would have been dead anyway. And second of all, if I died, Gedalia wouldn't fast for me. So, you know, what's so special about this guy Gedalia that we have to fast for him? So his assassination had tremendous political significance as part of the whole process of the Churban. But there's also a perhaps surprising halachic significance that the Gemara in Maseches Nida points us to on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph, that there the Gemara identifies the issue of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So Kabbalah's Lashon Hara is certainly something that we want to work on during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. We want to work on all of our Averos, and certainly the more common Averos. And the Gemara, once again, in Bava Basra, states, it gets synergy wherever we can find it, but the Gemara, once again, in Bava Basra, says, V'kulan Bavak Lashon Hara, that all of the Jews are guilty of at least some degree of Lashon Hara. So we certainly have to worry about fixing that issue, about correcting that Avera. But what's a little bit surprising is that the observance of Tzom Gedalia calls our attention to Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, not only as an Avera, but also as a very delicate balance. So we were just talking before about a balance of a different kind. But when it comes to Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, so the Gemara puts us in a very narrow space in the context of Gedalia, telling us that yes, we're not allowed to be Makabel Lashon Hara, but at the same time, sometimes we have to pay attention and we have to figure out what to do about that. So the Gemara over there talks about how the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu suggests that Gedalia was responsible for the death of others, for the people who were with him. So why is he responsible? So we're blaming the victim? How exactly is he responsible? He was the one who was assassinated. So the Gemara essentially explains that he was tipped off, that he was warned that there was a plot, and he didn't want to be makabel. He didn't want to accept this negative report, didn't want to accept Lashon Hara. And therefore, tragedy happened because he wasn't responsive to that. So but there's a prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So the Gemara there says that Hailish Nevisha, that when it comes to Lashon Hara, Afal bi de le kabule loboinan, that even though it's not proper to be makabalit, but lamechesh miboy, that still we have to be choshesh to it. So that line in the Gemara is crucially important and also somewhat mysterious. So how do you understand what that means? And before you theorize, I'll just also tell you that one line, just while Gedalia is calling our attention to things, the Gemara brings another story related to that. That's one of the most important lines for the discussion of whether a person has to risk his life to save others. So it's a big part of the contemporary COVID discussion. And the most prominent source in the Talmud Babli that's invoked in that context is also this Gemara, just to give a little bit of a tangential reference. But that line, the kabule, loboina, lemechesh miboy, so you're not supposed to be makabel, but you should be choshesh to it. So what does that mean? How do you find the space in that very narrow territory? So what does it mean not to be makabel, but you should be choshesh? So if you look at Rashi and Tosfos over there, and Tosfos quotes the Shiltos, so there are various ways of reading that phrase. And practically speaking, it's difficult. So, first of all, this was a topic of a major machlokas between the Chafetz Chaim and others, which also goes back to the question of simply what is the Isra of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara by itself, before you get into this tricky situation where there was a danger involved, but before you deal with the situation of potential sarkana to others. So what is the Isra of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara? So we should appreciate, first of all, that Kabbalah's Lashon Hara is not just an accessory to Lashon Hara itself. That you might think, okay, it makes sense that there should be an Isser to be involved as a recipient of Lashon Hara, because if there was no audience, then there never would be any speaking, because it would just fall flat. So we understand that you shouldn't be involved even on the receiving end of Lashon Hara. But what's striking is that the Gemara in Psachim, the parak we were learning last year, but we didn't actually get to this sugya as much as we wanted to, but the Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Gimel in Psachim tells us that there is a prohibition in of itself of being Makabel Lashon Hara, that one is not allowed to receive, not just as an accessory, but that it's its own Isser. And the Pasuk that the Gemara cites, the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, that there the Torah says, Lo Sisa Shema Shav, which is very difficult to translate. Every word there is a little challenging, but to try. So Lo Sisa, one should not support, lift up, bear, give any kind of strength to, a Shema, a report, Shin Mem Aleph, Shav, Shin Vav Aleph. So what does shav mean? So shav normally means useless. Like we talk about not taking Shem Hashem l'shav and the Shavuah shav. In those contexts, it means just unnecessary and it's a waste. And that would fit here, if that's what it meant, that we should not accept a report that is pointless. So if somebody gives you a negative report, it's Lashon Hara and it's not going to make a difference. Not l'toel, it's not to save anybody. So then, don't accept a report for no reason. But Rashi and Unklus over there translated differently. They translated as sheker. You should not receive a false report. And the Gemara says that's the source for the Isser of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. So that's interesting in and of itself, because we've always learned that Lashon Hara at least includes, maybe means specifically, a true report. If somebody tells you something that's negative and true, so you're not supposed to say that, then you're not supposed to be Makabalit. So it's noteworthy that according to the Gemara, together with Rashi and Unklus, when we're told we're not allowed to be Makabal Lashon Hara, it's from a pasuk that basically translates to do not accept a false report. So if Lashon Hara includes true, so what does it mean to say you shouldn't accept the false report as the source? So many Yonin Shai Tshuva says you have to add a word into the translation there. It means do not accept a report that is suffik shav. If there's something that might be false, do not jump to accept something as true that might be false, which we could relate to, that if something was false in a way that you knew it was false, so then you wouldn't need to be told, don't accept something that you know is false. So presumably it's got to be less than obvious in its falseness. So if there's something which may not be true, you shouldn't rush to accept it as true. Okay. So that we can understand. It's also noteworthy, and probably very much to the point here, that to bridge the gap here between saying that Lashon Hara is about saying things that are true, but the prohibition of being makabel is about don't be makabel false things, that it reflects the fact that Lashon Hara, even if you say that it's true, it doesn't really mean that it's fully true in the actual, literal, objective, and complete sense. It means that there are elements of truth, but there are elements that are not true, whether because they are incomplete, or they are subjective, or they're because of our biases in perceiving the truth, of which we have many. So it's very possible that the speaker might be saying something that he thinks is true, but what the listener is receiving is ultimately false. So therefore, you have a whole process here. The speaker thinks he's telling you the truth, but the prohibition regarding the listener is specifically because he's getting a picture that is false, and a picture that is shav. And just to emphasize the idea, we talk about biases and how that may influence a perception of truth, that the speaker might think he's telling the truth, but really he isn't. So when it comes to the listener, so they've documented something they call the teller-listener effect, that as much as the teller might be compromised in his perception of what is actually accurate, the listener is getting even worse. The listener is getting a more incomplete picture because of what's known as leveling and sharpening. Leveling is that you smooth out all the nuances. Everything just looks simple when maybe it's really more complicated. And sharpening, you take certain details and you emphasize them more strongly than they really should be, so you get a distorted picture. So, okay, so the prohibition, lo sisa shem l'shav. So what does that mean practically? So the Chafetz Chaim writes that it means that you should not even believe it in your heart. You shouldn't even believe it to be true. And others disagreed. Rav Moshe Sternberg, for example, in his Shuvas, he said, how could that be? You're going to decide not to believe something that's being told to you, and it makes sense, and it sounds credible, and the speaker is somebody you trust, so then you're going to believe it's true. So, it's not up to you to decide not to believe something that you know is true. So he thinks it means that you shouldn't be treating the person any differently because of what you heard. If you believe it, okay, you believe it. But as long as you don't treat the person differently, you don't allow them to be harmed, so then that perhaps is okay. Now, one could understand also where the Chafetz Chaim is coming from, that it's not totally true that you have no control over the process of believing. You do have some control over that, and you have a step where you're processing, and where it's what the Rabbi Yonah was alluding to, and that there is what you can do to decide to intervene with the process. But okay, so this was the Machlokes, and just to give an example of this, Machlokes was anticipated by the Shailos and Tshuvos Tirosh V'Yitzer, where he has a suffix. Let's say somebody were to come into this room right now all breathless because he wants to share the Lashon Hara that he just heard. So he looks to the first person he finds. So he sees this fine individual over here and he says, I heard this great Lashon Hara about Shmuel Kohn. I have to share it with you. So Shmuel is the person who he would be talking about. So what is Shmuel going to do here? So he really has three options, but because he's a tzaddik, we're not considering even the first option, which is to say to him, hello, I'm Shmuel. So that would embarrass him too much. So apparently he's not going to do that. But his other two options, he could either say, I'm not interested in listening to Lashon Hara. You actually told me that's what it's about, so I'm rejecting it. Or maybe he could listen anyway, since it's not going to harm anybody, since he's the one who's talked about it, then he'll get a bracha by listening to his disgrace and not responding. So it seems like those are the two tzadim that the Chafetz Chaim is saying, that you shouldn't even allow the conversation to happen in a way that gives the speaker this satisfaction. While Rav Sternbuch was saying it's about not letting people get hurt through the spread of this information, and that's why he might make the decision that, okay, I'm the subject, so I'm not going to be harming anybody by listening, so I might as well let him talk. So in general, you have this machlokas about what Kabbalah's Lashon Hara is. So what about in this context specifically, where there is a toelas consideration? So, and the Gemara says you have this delicate balance that shouldn't be makabel, but you should be choshesh to it. So first and foremost, we know that there is a need to listen and to act when somebody is in danger. That the Torah also tells us, lo samar al dam riacha, that we're not allowed to stand idly by if somebody is at risk. And that is the next part of the same pasuk that tells us about the prohibition of Lashon Hara, the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, which tells us, lo selech rachel b'yamecha, shouldn't go around telling stories, but also says, lo samar al dam riacha, you can't stand idly by. And that tells us, according to many, that's the principle of toelis, that if information is important to protect somebody from harm, so you have to say it, you have to listen to it, you have to act on it. So the Chafetz Chaim understood that you have to act on it, yes. That's what it means, l'mechesh mebayi. So you'll have to take whatever steps necessary to protect somebody from harm. But still, you shouldn't be makabel. You shouldn't even believe it in your heart that it's true. And then he goes even further than that. He says that even as a suffix, you shouldn't believe it even as a suffix. So that's a little hard to understand. What does it mean to, you're not sure if it's true and it's not even a suffix? Isn't that the definition of a suffix? So the Chazon Ish was quoted as saying about that, he says, Ein ze alamdus. You know, I don't know what that means practically. It just doesn't have any actual impact in the world. That's what a suffix is. So I think what the Chafetz Chaim is saying, and it's very important because we find ourselves with these kinds of issues all the time, that in a perfect world, that in a WWCD, what would the Chafetz Chaim do? In the Chafetz Chaim's very refined attitude and behavior, so he would take every step necessary to protect the innocent. That would be what comes first, or mechush mebay. But as far as how that characterizes the person who's being accused without 100% proof, if somebody is questionable, but we don't know it for sure, so he would not believe it at all. And not even as a suffix, because a suffix stigmatizes too. So he'd say, as far as the person's cheskes kashrus, if we don't know that they're guilty, so then they could be completely free of any kind of even suspicion. But at the same time, whatever steps have to be taken to protect the innocent, that is going to happen also. So it seems like, in the way we relate to things, that seems like a contradiction, because how could you get that specific balance? But I think in the Chafetz Chaim's world, that was something that could coexist, that you're very machmir on the Indian of Los Amaral Dam Re'acha, and you'll do whatever you can to protect the innocent. But that comes without any kind of labeling, even misafik, of the person who you're taking the steps of protection from, which is a fascinating balance. Just to illustrate the balance, so let's say, for example, you're about to go into business with someone, you're going to invest your life savings with someone named Plony Almoni. And I tell you, wait, Plony Almoni, I think he's a con man, he's a thief. But there are three people named Plony Almoni, so I don't know for sure if that's the one you're dealing with. So what would you do? Would you invest your life savings with this guy? There's a 1 in 3 chance he's a thief. So you probably wouldn't, because that's too high of a risk to take with your life savings, and a 1 in 3 chance. But on the other hand, if I were to ask you, you have to decide right now, this guy, is he a thief? So 2/3 chance he isn't. So it's more likely that he's not. So those two ideas can coexist, that we could take steps that protect from harm, while at the same time not assume guilt that you don't know is necessarily there.
The probability wouldn't be necessary. It could be a 1 in 10 chance that he's not.
Okay, so then you'd have to decide how much of a risk you can take for one.
Saying you wouldn't invest, but you won't believe it at all.
Yeah, but that's the same point. You're saying that's exactly it. That's, you could have both at the same time. You wouldn't invest. You're not going to take that step. But at the same time, you're able to see him. You're seeing the numbers. You could illustrate it with even.
Yeah, I'm saying it wasn't necessary to have the majority.
Be 1/3. Yeah, basically, even if the numbers were shifted, you can still have the same conclusion. But the point is that the two ideas can coexist. That there's too high of a risk here, and it's going to mean this guy's going to lose out on the investment. So he is suffering in that sense. But the need to avoid harm is overwhelming. But at the same time, as far as the assessment of the person, that's still reserved for further proof, and reserved in a way that preserves his cheskes kashrus. So it's a delicate balance. It's something that the world deals with all the time, and it's very, very tricky finding that balance. So we've seen over the course of the few psukim in Vayelech, and also this topic from some Gedalia, that there are a couple areas where finding that perfect balance is very tricky. Another area is finding how much you can say and share and still allow people to get to the some Gedalia Mincha in time. So we'll have to stop here to allow for that. Be'ez Hashem, stay tuned for our plans on Sunday, and throughout the first half of next week, we'll try to do that balance of getting as much of a basra in with as much Shem Tovim related material in, and we'll do the best we can. You should have a meaningful and uplifting fast, and a very good Shabbat Shuvah that should also be meaningful and uplifting, and we'll see you soon.